Overlooking Phoenix, from high above in the Star Worldwide Network studios, Badge Boys. Stories, insight, guests, and true blue humor with retired police sergeant Darren Birch and retired police officer Jason Schechterly. And now, here they are, the Badge Boys.
Welcome back to another edition of the Badge Boys, a show where two retired cops talk to the community. I'm retired Crime Stopper Sergeant Darren Birch.
I'm retired Phoenix Police Officer Jason Schechterly.
And we have another compelling episode on Badge Boys. We have a return guest, Audra Weeks. Several months ago, she came in and talked about two horrific sex crimes that occurred to her in honor of Sexual Assault Awareness Month. Today, she comes back because, number one, she's an author of a brilliant book called Moving Mountains, A Hero's Journey. And she's going to tell the third story of her victimization. And I'm not calling her a victim. She's a survivor. She's going to talk about the homicidal hands of her uncle. Then in the second segment, we're going to talk about the NBA, the NFL, and how they're weighing in, or at least the players are, on things they know nothing about and consequences. And in the last segment, we're going to have stupid suspect stories, heroic headlines, and of course, Jason's always inspirational message. So stay tuned, stay informed. You're going to be entertained.
More stories, inside guests, and true blue humor coming up on Badge Boys. We'll be back right after this.
I remember the moment. I'll never forget that moment.
As long as I live.
Several of us were working to rescue a family.
The house collapsed on top of the cellar door and trapped them.
We had to use Humvees and heavy machinery to move massive trees and debris.
We got them out.
We helped a lot of people out.
It felt good to know I could really make a difference.
Because I'm a citizen soldier in the National Guard.
Be there the moment your community needs you. Learn more at NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the Arizona National Guard. Aired by the Arizona Broadcasters Association and this station.
Move over, AZ. Arizona's move over law requires you to move over or slow down when you drive past any vehicle pulled over with flashing lights. Remember, every vehicle, every time. Move over, AZ.
Sponsored by ADA in partnership with the Arizona Broadcasters Association and this station.
You're listening to Badge Boys with retired Police Sergeant Darren Birch and retired Police Officer Jason Schechterly. Now, back to the Badge Boys.
Jason, I don't know if you know this about me, but I'm not a big reader, and I don't even consider myself a writer. I'm an author, but I'm not a writer.
Two books now? Come on.
Yeah, but they started in crayon, so you know, they are what they are.
Okay.
But having said that, I had a chance to read a book called Moving Mountains, A Hero's Journey, and it was based on a guest we had several months back.
Yes.
And on the show, she talked about horrific encounter with a stepfather who was sexually abusive and attacked her. And then sadly, as a teen, then she was raped by a classmate. Great radio, horrible crimes, sad situations that she's had to endure. But because of her indomitable spirit, she really has. She's thrived to a point where she's written a book, but not just about those two crimes, but the attempt homicide by her uncle. I mean, it's right out of some type of Shakespearean play. Right. And I had no idea until I read her book and was just so moved by it that I called her up and asked if she would come back, and she has. So, Audra, I thank you for coming back. Before I have you weigh in, I want to read your bio. Audra Weeks is a certified clinical hypnotherapist and Reiki master. Am I pronouncing that right?
Reiki,
thank you. See, I knew I screwed it up. She is also the author of Moving Mountains, A Hero's Journey. The book is a 5-star read that chronicles her survival from 3 horrific attacks. As a child, she was attacked by her sexually abusive stepfather. As a teen, she was raped by a classmate. And as a single mother, she was a victim of a brutal, brutal crime at the homicidal hands of her uncle. And today, she is going to share that with us. First and foremost, I want to thank you for the book. It was such a wonderful read. I highly recommend it, and we're going to talk more about the book. But coming in here today, you're still on this journey, are you not?
I am still definitely on this journey.
How has the book been received?
The book has been received well. I'm getting feedback either they can't put it down or something within it triggers them, whether it be it that they can relate to my story so much so, and they're still on their healing journey, that it's hard for them to continue. But it seems like for the most part, I'm getting people reading it in a single sitting. They can't put it down.
Yeah, it really is. I wrote a review. In fact, I'll read it. As a detective, having investigated countless cases in my 3-year law enforcement career, I couldn't help but agonize for her and amazed by Audra in this well-written and compelling book. Audra not only confides in chilling detail the nature of each crime, but more importantly, she brilliantly interweaves the story of her survival and her healing journey decades later. I read the book from front to back in a single setting, and that's absolutely true. Single setting. I just couldn't put it down, as this is a genuine page turner and it will compel you to do likewise. I want to read just the very first reading in this book. It's on chapter 12, and this is really talks about what happened with you and your uncle. At around 3 a.m., he crept silently into the house. He quietly set a roll of duct tape and a knife on the stairs. He entered my room. As I peacefully slept, he stood over me. He lifted a 2x2 piece of wood and swung it at my head as hard as he could. The club shattered, throwing shards of wood across the entire room. He put his hands around my neck. He squeezed harder and harder. He didn't stop. It was his intent to strangle me to death. I read that because I really want the audience to understand this was a life, not just life-altering, which it obviously was, but potentially life-ending. And I really kind of equate it to your indomitable spirit. I've known you now since, you know, we were introduced, oh my gosh, maybe a year ago. And I've just come to understand what I think is your strengths. And I know the book talked a lot about your struggles dealing with not just this crime, but a crime that when you were a child, then as a teen, and then this. Just one of those things could have very well have ruined a person. You've become, again, an author sharing your story. That's not just courage, that's strength. Can you talk a little bit about what inspired you, and then let's get into the weeds, if you will, on what occurred?
I think what inspired me most to write the book is that going through all these traumas, there were a lot of points in my life where I felt like I was alone. I was alone in it. I was alone in my pain. I was alone in my shame and all the other emotions that go with trauma. And after going through a journey, I call it the healing journey, through cognitive therapy, I decided that I was going to take all this ugliness that had happened in my life and turn it into something beautiful by writing my story in hopes that it might light the way for someone else.
Speaking of your story, and again, I can't help but look at three horrific events, but for the purpose of our show today, September 6, 1991, can you kind of build into that? What was your relationship with your uncle? A little bit of backstory, if you will.
Sure. So my aunt and uncle lived in California, and my aunt had decided that she was going to leave him, and she moved herself and her children to Payson, Arizona. And about a year, well, shortly after she moved to Payson, my uncle followed her so that he could be closer to his kids. And probably about a year after she had moved, she had asked me if I wanted to come up there and help her with her children. And in turn, she would buy a decent car that I could go to college with. And I was with my boyfriend at the time, but I was only 20 years old and my daughter was only 14 months old, and my life was going nowhere. And so I thought that this would be a great opportunity for me to, you know, help my aunt and also get my life on track, go to college, do something, you know, expand my knowledge. And when I went up there, it wasn't that. That's not what happened.
And you were still dealing or not dealing with the trauma that occurred during those two sex crimes. Is that a fair statement?
It is a fair statement. And I would definitely say that there was aspects of my behavior that showed that there was trauma in my background, but I definitely was not dealing with it. I had buried those incidents as deep as I possibly could. So
when I look at this, I think in my mind, God, you had to be fragile. But that's not how this story ends. It ends with a lot of strength. Tell us about that night. And if you will, since I read the book, I know there was some foreshadowing going on as far as dreams and so forth.
So I was up in Payson helping my aunt, and about 5 weeks in, well, let me backtrack a little bit. So my aunt and my uncle's relationship was becoming volatile. They were separated and she was seeing somebody else, and the fighting started over custody of the children. So being that I was the caregiver to the children most of the time, I was the one who was stuck in the middle, you know, from what my aunt's wishes were and my uncle showing up. And it put me in a lot of uncomfortable situations. And as things started beginning to get more volatile between my aunt and my uncle, I started to have nightmares. I was dreaming that my uncle had come to the house and that he was trying to kill me and his girls. So my aunt had four kids, but the two oldest, the boys, have a different dad. And then the two youngest, the girls, have my uncle, his name's Russ, as their dad. And the only people that were in the dream were me and his two girls. And in the dream, I had put them in the dryer and told them to be quiet while I fought him off because I didn't know where to hide them. I was trying to keep them safe. And I had confided in my mom that I was having nightmares and dreams that he was coming to the house trying to kill me and the girls. And she told me that she thought I should talk to my aunt about it and confide in her. And I did not, at that time in my life, my relationship with my aunt, I didn't feel safe to tell her this. I think a lot of it was my own projection of, I don't know if unworthiness would be the right words, but I was insecure. I was definitely insecure. And my aunt is a very strong-willed woman. And I think some of that for her, this is just my own perception, but is that she's has stuff in her life too where she presents
a hard front,
and that's her way of protecting herself. And I didn't realize this at the age of 20, so to me, I was kind of scared of her to approach her about something like that.
And plus, it was just a bad dream. I'm curious, you probably just threw it off as that because he's never attacked you or hurt you or anything. Is that true?
He did not have a demeanor like that at all. When they lived in California, he was a lawyer. And then when he moved to Payson, he became a substitute teacher, a crisis counselor, and a coach to different athletic sports. So no, there was nothing about his behavior or his life in general that would lead me to believe that I needed to be afraid of him or dream that he was trying to kill us.
And unbeknownst to you, your mother had shared that dream, that nightmare, with her, but that was not known to you either by your mom or by your aunt.
Correct. So my mom had shared with my aunt that...
Good for your mom.
Yeah, that I was having nightmares, and I did not know that my mom had shared that information with her. When she told me that she felt I should talk to my aunt about it, I told her, no, I don't feel comfortable doing it, and please don't tell her. I begged my mom not to tell her. I didn't want my aunt to know that I was feeling vulnerable and that I didn't want to be up in Payson anymore. I didn't want my aunt to know that.
So this is all prior to September 6th, 1991. What happened that night?
So he came into the house and he started with me because I was the
and
only...
And you were in bed sleeping. Lay out a little bit of the, where everybody was, if you will.
Okay, so it was around 3 o'clock in the morning that he came in the house.
Early morning.
I was asleep downstairs. I was the only one downstairs. Everybody else was asleep upstairs. My daughter, thank God, she was not there. My boyfriend had come that day to help a friend, and he took her home with him because I was going to be heading back down to New River within the next couple of days. So he took her. So thank God she wasn't there. But my aunt and three of my cousins were sleeping upstairs, and he came in and he started with me because I was the only one downstairs, and he struck me in the head with the 2x2 club, and it shattered. And he proceeded then to to try to strangle me to death. And when I opened my eyes and looked at him, he looked startled. Like he was genuinely startled that I was not unconscious. And he started
on the crack of the head, because that's what woke you.
It kind of woke me. Like, it brought me out of whatever deep sleep I was in. I wouldn't say I was necessarily awake yet, because I remember when he was strangling me, I didn't know, I wasn't aware that I was being strangled, but I could tell that my body was in duress, but I didn't know what was wrong. And then as I was coming more awake, I realized I couldn't breathe. And I opened my eyes, and his eyes got huge. He was very startled by the fact that I was not unconscious.
What happened then?
I was able to get one of my legs in between him and I, and me and my big soccer legs.
I was going to say, you were an athlete in high school.
I was. Actually, not in high school, but prior to high school. I played soccer for 5 years, so... when I'm in shape, I tend to have an athletic build. So I was able to push him off of me, push him far enough away to where he had no choice to let go of my neck.
And then what happened?
I started screaming, and he fled the house.
And he's still on the bottom stairs, or bottom level, excuse me. So when he flees and you're screaming, I'm assuming somebody comes to your rescue.
No one came to my rescue. When he turned around to flee the house, I was literally right behind him out of that bed screaming, and I rounded the corner to go up the stairs, and my aunt and two of my cousins were standing there already. My littlest cousin, she was only two, so she was in a crib still, but I was screaming over and over and over, Aunt Therese, Russ tried to kill me. Aunt Therese, Russ tried to kill me. And I had blood squirting from my head from him clubbing me. And she had thought that I had had a nightmare and bumped my head on the headboard, which made it seem more real to me.
And that's what she was saying to you.
Yes. She said, are you dreaming? Did you have a bad dream? And I was hysterical. I mean, absolutely. There was nothing rational about how I was feeling, how I was behaving. I just kept saying over and over and over, Russ tried to kill me.
And at some point, police are involved. Can you talk about that?
Sure. So my aunt needed to verify that I was, in fact, not dreaming before she decided that she was going to make the call to the police. And she went downstairs and saw that the kitchen door was ajar, and she knew that my story was valid. So she came back upstairs and she called the police, and they came and they brought dogs with them. And so they were, there was sheriffs everywhere, but a group of them had taken the dogs out looking for him. A group had gone to his home looking for any clues or evidence where they might find him.
And what did they find at his home?
They found a wadded up list of scenarios in his trash can. And it had all kinds of scenarios. For example, take girls killing four, take girls killing none, killing everybody in the house but Terry. And that one was labeled the easiest scenario of all. And I believe that was the scenario that he was playing out.
Cold, calculated, insidious plan of murder. And this is from a guy who was a lawyer, a counselor, a teacher. So bizarre, but it gets even more bizarre because you weren't safe in that home, were you? Even as the police were there.
I didn't feel safe in the home.
Because he was out there somewhere.
He was out there.
Where was he?
Well, about 24 hours after they were searching for him, he had made his way back to the house, and he was hiding in a treehouse in the backyard. So for the next 24 hours, because I was there for about 48 hours after the crime took place, in case the investigators needed, because I was a key witness, I had to be there until they were done asking any questions that they had. A detective from California had, so the morning of the incident, my aunt had called a detective in California, and he later that morning came. My uncle was a suspect in a murder that had happened 3 years prior. I did not know this. This was all news to me. But he was under...
And not just a suspect, we're talking the prime suspect,
Yes, he was the primary suspect. One of his clients had been brutally beaten to death in her sleep, and he was the primary suspect for that crime. And after what happened with me, we all knew beyond a shadow of a doubt that he had brutally murdered that woman.
And here he was returning to the scene of the crime with you. And I'm only assuming to finish what he left, because now there's a witness and the police were there and that saved your life. That's how I look at it.
I don't know what his intentions were, but my best guess was at that point he felt like he had nothing left to lose. So I know once we all vacated the house, he had broken back into the house, and I don't know what his plan or his intentions were from then on.
And he was captured?
He was captured. My aunt had been calling around to different hotels and stuff to find a safe place for her and the girls and my older cousin to go. And she realized that she had left that list by the phone, and she asked the sheriffs to go over to the house and retrieve that list, because what if Russ broke into the house and he found that list? That was access. He had access to them. So when they went to the house to go retrieve that list, they had noticed that one of the windows was already broken out, and they found him in the house. He was like, he had shoved himself in a cupboard in one of the bedrooms upstairs. He was so crammed in there that they had to physically pull him out.
In your book, it goes on to say, a few months after the sentencing was over, the television show A Current Affair aired the story of Russ. I watched, as I'm sure millions others did, a reenactment of that night in the bedroom. It was very surreal to watch it on TV as a spectator. It made me sick to my stomach to watch a stranger playing my part in something that was very real and so personal. It was just a script to them. Why, I still suffered tremendously from the reality of it all. Clips were shown of his videotaped confession of the murder of the woman in California. I watched as he laughed in those clips after giving gruesome details of that murder, like it was nothing. Truly psychotic. How are you now thinking back? Because this was someone that you grew up. This was a, I don't want to say a dear uncle, but this was a family member who you thought highly of. I mean, how have you dealt with that homicidal betrayal is the only thing I can say.
Well, for decades, I did not deal with it. I buried it the best that I could, just like I had all the other traumas before. There were specific things about this trauma that I couldn't hide, like the PTSD that went with it. There was no hiding that. And I just did the best that I could with it. And then as time went on, it was getting easier and easier. Like, more dirt was being put on it. It was being buried deeper and deeper. And about 3 years ago, I went on the healing journey. And I definitely have some issues still. I have some trust issues, and there's a lot of core beliefs that I had about myself due to all the traumas that I had experienced, but I've come a long way. I've healed a lot.
Thank you.
She has.
And reading this book is a wonderful book, and I want you to tell us how someone can get it. You talked earlier, the two kind of aspects that you get from it. You know, it's the, like, my God, I just loved it, a page turner, but it's also a triggering effect because you're dealing with three separate different types of crimes, you know, child molestation, sexual assault, attempt homicide. So where is it available, and what would you tell people that you hope they get from the book?
It's available on Amazon.com, and I have a website, AudraReneeWeeks.com. There's also a tab on there where you can just click and it'll take you right to Amazon. What was the second part of your question?
What do you hope the reader gets from the book?
I hope that the reader can find some hope for themselves, that there is hope and healing, that the demons that they're fighting within themselves have been fought before and won. And although healing from trauma is probably a lifelong thing, which I'm coming to terms with, it gets better. And there is a lot of healing that can take place to where you can live a more fulfilled life. So I just hope people can walk away with hope.
Yeah, because what I loved about the book is it's these compelling stories, these sad stories, tragic stories, but it also interweaves your journey of this healing. Almost could be a workbook for someone if they're going through a like-type crime. And again, you got three complete separate kind of crimes dealing with this. Thank you so much for joining us today and sharing your story. But more importantly, thank you for writing the book and sharing it with the world.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate the opportunity to potentially help somebody else.
We'll be right back.
More stories, inside guests, and true blue humor coming up on Batch Boys. We'll be back right after this.
Move over, AZ. Arizona's move over law requires you to move over or slow down when you drive past any vehicle pulled over with flashing lights. Remember, every vehicle, every time. Move over, AZ.
Sponsored by ADOT in partnership with the Arizona Broadcasters Association and this station.
I'll never forget that moment.
As long as I live.
My first call up ever as a member of the National Guard.
When we got to the armory, they briefed us on the wildfires. They were getting dangerously close to homes.
Helicopters were going out to drop water on the fires.
Guys in the unit were preparing for firefighting with local fire crews.
At that moment, I got my first taste of just how important the Guard is to my community.
See how the Guard can be an important part of your life at NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the Arizona National Guard. Aired by the Arizona Broadcasters Association and this station.
You're listening to Batch Boys with retired Police Sergeant Darren Birch and retired Police Officer Jason Schechterly. Now, back to the Batch Boys.
Welcome back to Bad Boys, everybody. That was an awesome, awesome interview with Audra. Darren.
Powerful.
Way to go. What a book. What a story. Just incredible. So much respect for her and with the grace that she tells her story. And I hope that there are people out there who will benefit from it, will listen to it even quietly and find some source of inspiration. So good job. We're going to move on to Cop Talk. And this week, we're going to touch on something. I know I say this all the time, gets me fired up, but.
I'm not going to be going this time.
You know, I seriously live, or we all do, we live in a world right now that I just never in my 47 years would have thought I would have seen. I did a speech to DFOP last week. It was my first in-person speech since March.
Good for you.
About 70 people in the room. Pretty cool.
Yeah.
And one thing I brought up, you know, I in my speeches, I don't get into religion or politics. I stay away from, you know, I talk about my story and try to inspire people to overcome adversity. And just tell them the simple truth, and then it's their choice to what they want to take away from it. Because I don't know, when I'm looking at 70 people, they all have a story. I don't know what they're going through. But the one thing that I brought up to them, I said, listen, it is kind of crazy to me right now that I saw in the news last week that three guys in a church parking lot in Idaho. Now, I expect shit from L.A., Chicago, New York. We are talking about Idaho, which is nothing but kindness.
And sheep.
Possibly true. Three guys singing songs, not wearing masks, were arrested, put in cuffs, and even the police officers. On video, you can hear these officers saying, we wish we didn't have to do this. But I told the crowd, I said, but in today's world, so you have three guys in a church parking lot singing, but if I grab four or five of you and without masks, we go out and we set fire to businesses, we hurt people who have nothing to do with anything, then we are okay, according to the national media. And that's just the plain simple truth. It's like living in the Twilight Zone. And one thing that's really been prevalent is sports is starting to come back, right?
Yes. So yeah, because of COVID-19, they're actually playing things.
Yeah, the NBA is playing, and they've got their little bubble thing where they play all in one place. The World Series is talking about doing that. The NFL came back, no fans. College football, I don't know if you watched on Saturday, but there was actually quite a few fans at a lot of different games in certain parts of the country. So it's interesting to see how different areas of the country are
coming back,
responding and doing things.
And coming back.
But the one thing that really struck me was you've got the NBA. They went through the playoffs, and now the finals have been set. You've got the Miami Heat versus the Los Angeles Lakers, and the NFL is going. And what really struck out to me was the ratings from last year have dropped significantly. And now I will tell you, I'm one of those people. I have, not only do I have severe OCD, I have a weird case of OCD. Like, I watch sports right now and I'm like, it's not real. You're playing only a handful of games. That whoever gets crowned a World Series champion, and I'm a huge, I mean, baseball without a doubt is my love and passion, is what my son does. He's going to play college baseball. It's what I like to watch on TV, but they're still only playing half the season. I'm glad they're playing, but once the World Series comes, I'm going to be like, yeah, that wasn't real. And that's my own personal opinion. I think the NFL is playing a full schedule. Then you have the college teams that are, some teams are playing 8 games, some teams are playing a little bit less, some teams are staying in conference, but the ratings are dropping significantly, up to 40% droppage. But the one thing that really gets me, and it gets me with, I'll use my son as an example. He's going to play college baseball, and I have told him very blatantly, if it was not for your athletic ability, you would be, he's my youngest, you would be the one kid who I would say, do not go to college. Go to welding school.
Trade school.
And come out making money, because teachers right now in this country, and my wife's a teacher, I love teachers. However, a lot of teachers, mostly in college, which when I say mostly, about 90% of college professors, they don't teach anymore. They only pass on ideology and their thoughts, and they're influencing young minds. Over and above teachers, nobody, and I know this from growing up all the way to today, nobody can influence a child the way that an athlete can. And the face, I can tell you honestly, I stopped watching the NBA about 20 years ago. I mean, like with every fiber of my being, with every thought and emotion in my head and heart, I hate the NBA. I hate the Phoenix Suns, which is where I live. I hate their owner. I hate everything about it because they are bad charactered people. So, and I'm going back 20 years, long before the country was as divisive as it is right now. But what you're seeing this week is the face of the NBA is who?
The players.
But who
Which
is
player?
The, who is the true face?
Oh, LeBron James.
LeBron James.
The king.
Right? He is the current
King James.
You know, we grew up
heir apparent.
I am so blessed that I grew up being able to watch Michael Jordan. And
Charles Barkley.
Notice how Michael Jordan is nice and quiet and just lives his life and
by
does
example.
His thing. Yes, leads by example. LeBron James, having been bestowed the title of King James, I think he has taken that to heart, and he believes that his voice and his opinion actually matter to us. Well, as a 47-year-old man, I can tell you LeBron James doesn't mean shit to me. And again, I'll digress for a quick second. The problem in this country is I say I don't like LeBron James, and everybody's going to go, oh, my God, Jason Shechtley's a racist. Yet there's 2,000 other black athletes that I love and worship and watch and root for. LeBron James is a bad person. He's a bad character, and he gets his facts wrong. He recently weighed in on the Breonna Taylor case, and he said things that were inaccurate. For example, he said that the Kentucky crime lab got the evidence wrong, yet the Kentucky crime lab admitted not being able to conclude what was going on. So what did they do? They sent it to the FBI. That's why the investigation took 5 months. Then the FBI actually figured out what really happened. And the Breonna Taylor death is a horrible tragedy. Horrible tragedy. She should not be dead right now. I feel terrible for her and her family. But when you have an NBA player like LeBron James, who is speaking, again, he's not speaking to you and I, because you and I could give two shits about him. I don't care if he makes a basket. I don't care what he says. I wish he'd put on a real uniform and go serve. He's going to make a great politician someday, because he's great at lying, and he's great at being a narcissistic piece of shit. But who he's speaking to is 6-year-olds, 8-year-olds, 12-year-olds, like a lot of teachers, and passing on his beliefs and his ideology without facts and truth. And that is a serious defining problem of what's going on in the country right now. You have a guy, and you did it last night. I told you before we went on air, I made the mistake. I knew it was a mistake before I started, and I drank heavily at the time, but I watched the debate.
You mean the pissing match?
Yes.
Angry old men fighting?
The debate is very easy to sum up. There is nothing you can say about the debate matters. It is very simple. Us as Americans are fucked. That's it. The debate's over. That is all that last night showed. But then I go through Twitter, and I'm like, let me see what everybody says. And all these Hollywood people and athletes are weighing in as if we give two shits. LeBron James has no effect on what goes on in my house, my son's baseball career, my other son's career that's being on hold right now because of COVID, what my daughter is doing, my finances, my job. He has no effect on that, but he talks in a way that he does, and that's fine, except that he lies. And he is he himself, race spans all genres, age, gender, and actual color of your skin. LeBron James is very racist. You can tell that in what he says. And you're seeing the backlash of what true Americans think by these ratings that are going on. So I've gone on my rant long enough into this segment, Darren. I'd love to know what your thoughts are on the athletes in general, but basically what I've said. And as always, feel free to tell me I'm wrong.
You know, it's interesting, because even though I totally agree with what you're saying, I come from a different perspective. I'm not a baseball fan. Just don't like baseball. I love basketball. I love football. And when a certain quarterback came out and was clearly anti-cop, wearing joking pig socks and kneeling at the national anthem and creating a movement out of a false narrative that cops are all bad, and why people listened to him, but they did. There was a little bit of a rising. And the NFL, I thought, did appropriate in trying to stem the tide as much as they could. So I didn't boycott. I didn't, you know, throw away my love of football, nor did I throw away my love of basketball. In fact, still, I love football and love basketball. When I was listening to LeBron James speak, he spoke from a place of hatred. He spoke as if he knew what he was talking about.
He spoke of a place from race.
And that hatred of police, that belief that police are bad, you could hear it in what he was saying. And like you said, he was wrong. Whether he was outright lying or he was passing false information, doesn't matter.
He's
speaking from a pulpit that a lot of kids listen to,
yeah,
and a lot of fans like myself,
yes,
listen to. I will never, ever think of these athletes as heroes. They're not. They're gifted individuals that have such athleticism.
And they provide us entertainment.
Thank you.
They are not heroes. Athletes are not heroes, and I've been hearing that my whole life. There's not one single athlete in the history of this world.
There is one.
Thank you.
Pat Tillman is
Army
a hero, but he's not a hero because he was an athlete.
No, he went
he's
to war.
He's a hero
because he
gave up millions of dollars, and then he sacrificed his life for his country.
Yep.
So, Robin, you are very correct. Pat Tillman is a hero, and
right,
but not because of athletes. He changed uniforms.
Being here in Arizona, he went to ASU. He played for the Cardinals. Of course, I love Pat Tillman. I love his statue out at Cardinal Stadium. But he's not a hero because he played football and was a good linebacker.
No.
He's a hero because he died for this country, and he gave up millions of dollars to do that. Do you think LeBron James would ever give up his little cushy thing that he lives in and go serve
in
a uniform?
Nope.
It would never happen.
It would scare the hell out of him.
It would never happen. Well, he just wouldn't do it because he's too narcissistic.
So when you talk about they don't matter to you, there are the other fans like myself who love football, who love basketball. And I made a personal decision beginning of this.
I love football.
I made a personal decision. I'm not watching. I don't advocate it. I don't try to preach it to my people that follow me on social media. What I decided to do is a personal decision. I'm boycotting it because I believe LeBron James and the others that love to speak, Cam Newton, it's not just LeBron. There's others that love to use that pulpit to preach hatred against police officers. And when we have police officers that are being shot, I could keep going, all the places, Dallas, Los Angeles, Minneapolis, all these officers are being targeted because of the things that are being said in this divide.
And they never say a word about that.
And there was a black officer who was shot and in the stomach.
Yep.
With the most recent riots.
Yep.
And they don't say a word about that.
No,
so because of their hatred, I'm not going to watch. Because they have blood on their hands and they don't even know it or they don't care to know it. So like you, I'm absolutely outraged at this false information. I was telling you and The Rock and Robin that actors, I care less about what they have to say to anyone on this planet because
God,
the only reason we watch them
on
TV is because a screenwriter wrote great lines for them.
Yeah.
We're not listening to them talk. I just want to see the damn movie, and I don't want them to be preaching on things they know nothing about.
Yeah, I can't believe how they come out with, and I respect the actresses, for example, who come out with like that, the Me Too movement, and they talk about how they were sexually assaulted,
or their
careers were held back because they did not do
coercion.
Some producer.
Absolutely.
Yes. But then when you read things like, Alyssa Milano is a great example. Alyssa Milano, who happened, you know what? 15 years ago, you were pretty. Now all you are is stupid and hateful, and nobody cares what you have to say on Twitter when all you do is pour hatred towards somebody else and you do not talk in facts and how to make this country better. And then because she says that, the way Hollywood is, she's going to get some other great job and entertain somebody else. I would never watch her again for any reason, but she's just an example of, and I could name off 10,000 people in Hollywood.
I'm so glad you mentioned her, because I don't know if you know this, but just a couple of days ago, This is the woman who is preaching defund police, demolish police. We don't like police. We don't need police. Yes. She called from her little mansion in the Beverly Hills area that...
That's well guarded and protected.
Right. That there was shooting happening in her neighborhood.
And what
God. What did she do? She called 911.
No way.
Yes, she did. She called 911. And not only did the officers arrive to save her from a little boy with a BB gun, but furthermore, they arrived, found the little boy, found the air rifle, and were polite and professional to her as they explained, "You're fine, ma'am. And anytime you have a concern, you call 911.
What a hypocrite.
How good is that for hypocrisy?
I love that.
Wow.
Spend every single day of your life preaching to family and friends or on Twitter to defund the police, abolish the police, hating toward police. But then on the night she needed them, she called the police, and guess who showed up? It's incredibly disgusting to just see these people. And again, back to the arrogance and the narcissism. What these athletes and people in Hollywood don't understand is most people like us, most people in all the flyover states, most people who are out there trying to make a living and worried about what's in their backyard, listen, and I know there's not an athlete, a professional athlete, or anybody in Hollywood listening to me right now.
You never know.
But let me make it clear. We don't give a fuck what you think or what you have to say. So please, please shut the fuck up and be a part of the solution in making America better instead of making it more divisive and more hatred-filled. We will be right back with our next segment, which will be much more positive than that segment was.
More stories, inside guests, and true blue humor coming up on Badge Boys. We'll be back right after this.
I remember the moment.
I'll never forget that moment.
As long as I live.
As long as I live.
Several of us were working to rescue a family.
The house collapsed on top of the cellar door and trapped them.
We had to use Humvees and heavy machinery to move massive trees and debris.
We got them out.
We helped a lot of people out.
It felt good to know I could really make a difference.
Because I'm a citizen soldier in the National Guard.
Be there the moment your community needs you. Learn more at NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the Arizona National Guard. Aired by the Arizona Broadcasters Association and this station.
Move over, AZ. Arizona's move over law requires you to move over or slow down when you drive past any vehicle pulled over with flashing lights. Remember, every vehicle, every time. Move over, AZ.
Sponsored by ADOT in partnership with the Arizona Broadcasters Association and this station.
You're listening to Badge Boys with retired police sergeant Darren Birch and retired police officer Jason Schechterly. Now, back to the Badge Boys.
That was a great segment. It was something that needed to be said across the spectrum with not just sports, but any entertainment. You're there to entertain, not provide false information, not by trying to divide.
And just, by the way, you're making $1 million to do it. So
thank you.
Just sit back and enjoy that.
More than
that. Let the real heroes talk. Let the people that are fighting crime in the streets. Let the people that are overseas keeping us safe. Let them talk.
Let a farmer in Kansas talk.
Thank you.
Hear a farmer in Kansas who's worried about when it's going to rain or how his crops are doing than listen to LeBron James.
I'd rather listen to a two-year-old, to be honest with you.
Seriously, you got to be fucking kidding me.
But there are real heroes out there, and you have a heroic headline, my friend, do you not?
Well, my heroic headline is... I want to give credit to Charles Barkley this week. And here in Phoenix, and I'm sure each city could name this, and Darren, you'll understand this from being here for a long time. We have four athletes from four different sports that we really consider good people, and we're grateful that they were here. We have Shane Doan, who played for the Hockeys, or played for the Coyotes for
damn
a long time.
Right.
We have, obviously, Larry Fitzgerald with the Cardinals, who is just a phenomenal, phenomenal individual.
Good spokesperson.
We have Luis Gonzalez from, not only did he have the winning hit in the World Series in 01, but he does a tremendous amount of work with first responders.
Class act.
He's a class act, great family. And then if you asked anybody in Arizona who the next or one of the top four athletes ever played in this city is, right away, without taking a breath, they would say Charles Barkley. You know, he was...
He redefined the Suns.
The last time the Suns were in the championship was 1993. Unfortunately, they were facing the Bulls, and they didn't have much of a chance. But I have loved Charles Barkley since he was... And I'm a huge Alabama fan. Anybody who knows me knows that. Charles Barkley went to Auburn, and I still love the guy. What I love about him is he has always spoken the truth. I mean, this is a guy who got arrested in Scottsdale for DUI, and I'm not going to repeat what he said. It's on, if you want to YouTube it, it's on camera, but it was hilarious, the truth that he told the cop of where he was going, what he was doing, and, you know, he got a DUI. He took responsibility. He paid his debt to society. He is... for as much as I hate the NBA, I do think that the NBA, whatever that show's called on TNT with Shaq and Charles Barkley, Kenny Walker, I think it's really good. Charles Barkley always speaks the truth. And the other night, Charles Barkley went on, I don't want to call it a rant. He just, you know, he had a little something to say, and it went viral, of course, because it didn't fit the narrative of all of the other athletes and all of our politicians who disagree. So all of a sudden, Charles Barkley, doesn't matter his race, it doesn't matter his standing as one of the best basketball players to ever live. He said something that upset people, but I find it to be very inspirational because he told the truth very simply.
Spoke from his
heart.
That's
all. He didn't.
Spoke from his heart.
It wasn't even an opinion. He just told the truth. And for what it was he was on air the other night. He's getting a lot of criticism right now, of course, on the internet, which all these people who just hide behind. Again, what you think, what somebody in Florida right now is tweeting out means nothing. It does not affect how I'm going to vote or what I'm doing in my own backyard or how I feel about my friends and my family. It's just social media is a fucking joke by far. But he referenced the film Ghostbusters when criticizing the concept of defunding the police. Barkley's comments came during an appearance on Inside the NBA, that's the name of it, an NBA post-game talk show on TNT. It's by far the most popular.
It's very entertaining.
Show. Oh my God, it's incredible, and it has a lot of viewers. Barkley on defunding the police, quote, "Who are black people supposed to call? Ghostbusters? When they have crime come into their communities." Barkley did not mince his words in the criticism of the movement to defund police forces, which has arisen in the wake of the latest deadly police shooting, or whatever's going to come tomorrow or the next day.
It's next thing they're going to exploit.
It's everybody from now on is going to be named George Floyd. And we have made it very clear. George Floyd was murdered in cold blood, and Derek Chauvin, he's a cop. I'd love he got the death penalty.
Was served. he went to jail.
Well, and hopefully
justice.
But I hope it gets served even harsher because I do think it was cold-blooded murder. However, every single black person that dies at the hands of police in the coming days, weeks, and years is not named George Floyd. That was its own case. Again, quote, "I hear these fools on TV talking about defund the police and things like that. We need police reform and prison reform and things like that. Because you know who ain't going to defund the cops? White neighborhoods and rich neighborhoods." And he's right about that. Barkley went on to reference the classic film Ghostbusters by way of explaining his advocating reform over defunding or abolition of police forces. "Who are black people supposed to call? Ghostbusters when they have a crime in our neighborhoods. White people, especially rich white people, they're always going to have cops. So we need to stop that defund or abolish the cops crap. And I love that he said that, because if you look at polls, 81% of minority neighborhoods don't agree with that. They don't want that. They need that. We have an activist here. She's an older black woman in Phoenix, and I apologize for not being prepared and knowing her name, but she gathered the police just the other night here in Phoenix and said, we need your help. We have a drug problem, a crime problem. There's a lot of shootings. And you know what the Phoenix Police Department did? They sat in on that meeting, and within days, Darren, within days, they made 180 arrests, which is going to make that community safer. And then this black female activist got on TV and said, thank you. And she said, you're helping the kids who you have arrested. You're also helping the kids who are trying to live their lives outside of crime be better. So I was very, very happy to hear Charles Barkley, somebody with his platform. Again, he uses his platform in a different way than somebody like LeBron James, but he simply spoke the truth. Law and order is needed. It is necessary. And the people who talk about abolishing and defunding the police, all of a sudden you notice in Minnesota right now, they're freaking out. The entire city council, the president of the city council, we don't have that name here. Their president was like, we have to get rid of police and we will have a community-based way of solving crimes. Well, now all of a sudden they're freaking out because Minnesota is getting destroyed, and they're saying, "What? Where are you? Why aren't you answering the calls?" Well, because you hate us and you took all the money away from our resources. The hypocrisy is amazing. So, Charles Barkley, thank you. I loved you. I've met you a couple times. We took a plane ride together. He's a genuine, funny individual. He cares about the communities that he has lived in, and he has served in a way. He knows he's an entertainer, and I absolutely love the guy.
What a great quote, huh?
No, yeah, who are you going to call? Ghostbusters? I almost fell out of my chair. I was laughing so hard because that's the kind of the truth. Who are you going to call? And in 3 to 5 years, when you start seeing on the news that a therapist
get shot
responded to a domestic violence call and was shot and killed, then what are all these crazy radicals who hate police going to say? I don't look forward to a therapist or a psychologist getting murdered, but I can't wait to see what they have to say then, because it's going to flip around to the police should have been there. Well, the police show up and they are there. They don't care about your race or where you live or your address. You call them, they come to help you. That is the plain and simple truth of the matter. So thank you to Charles Barkley. You always be one of my favorites. And I think he still lives here in Scottsdale. And I love the guy. I've loved him. But again, I've loved him for, 27 going on 30 years. I've loved this guy. So this is not something new that I'm like, oh, you spoke up and I respect that. No, I love this guy.
Yeah, he's a great guy. He redefined the Phoenix Suns. Before he came from Philadelphia, from the 76ers, he was a legend there.
Yeah.
The Suns were kind of like that Cinderella team. We're just kind of like a small-time team. He comes to the Valley and redefined the Phoenix Suns as a major player in the NBA, and they've been kind of like that ever since.
And ever since he left, the Suns have sucked, and continue to suck.
There was a guy by the name of Steve Nash. There was a guy by the name of Steve Nash.
And Steve Nash was a great guy. Did we ever make it back to the playoffs? Did we ever make it back?
Yes.
To do anything?
Not to the same level. Not to the same degree. We're never up to a game seven
And now Steve Nash is a coach in Brooklyn, and good for him, because you're right. He's a great guy. But you know why he's a great guy and kind? Because he's Canadian, and those guys are just nice. They're just nice. So
there's something you might not know about the TNT inside the NBA, which is really interesting. You mentioned his cohorts, which is Shaq and a guy named Kenny Smith.
Kenny Smith.
Kenny Smith, weeks earlier, had left the show in protest for Black Lives Matter. After the Kenosha shooting, he went on his little rant about how this is horrible, what's going on, and how bad police are. And he said, so to show protest, I'm walking off. He literally took off his mic and walked off the set, which, again, is just adding to a false narrative, because before they even know what happened in Kenosha, he's making a protest.
Did that change anybody's lives or way of thinking, or did it make anything better or worse?
Adds fuel to the fire. It made it worse. It adds fuel to the fire because it makes other people look and say, oh my God, I'm mad too. What are you mad about? You don't even know what happened yet.
Exactly.
It just occurred.
Lemmings.
It's stupid. Speaking of stupid, I have three stupid stories of BLM. And I don't
Yes,
BLM. I don't like calling them Black Lives Matter because Black Lives do matter.
Black Lives do matter.
And I love Black Lives. What bothers me is hijacking
all
those three beautiful words. They hijack those three beautiful words. They exploit it for their agenda. And their agenda is to defund, demolish the police departments. And it started in 2015 when they were absolutely chanting for the death of police officers, chanting kill cops. Some of them still do that, but you won't see it on the news. So these are the three stories.
What do we want from pigs? Fry them like bacon.
That started
years ago
2016.
In Ferguson. Yeah.
Yep. Louisville police say a weapon discharged by a Black militia member that injured three people, and this is a while back ago, is being investigated as a negligent shooting, as well it should be, and not as an accident, and could result in criminal charges. For those who don't remember, back in July, on a Saturday, three people were shot in a Baxter Park after a member of the NFAC. And by the way, NFAC means Not Fucking Around Coalition. Yep, that's what it means. But they were fucking around.
More creative.
They were fucking around. You're joking, right? I am not.
What they stand for?
That is their name. The NFAC is for Not Fucking Around Coalition, but they were fucking around because they unintentionally discharged a gun during their demonstration. Police spokesman for the Lamont, Washington police said that one of the people shot had a minor injury, another was a serious injury but stable, and the third has been moved to an ICU but will hopefully survive. And I do hope they survive. I don't want people to die. But that was stupid suspect story number one, the Not Fucking Around Coalition screwing around and shooting their own people during a protest. Pretty stupid. Stupid story number two, BLM protesters in Seattle claim that their expensive gear to protect them from the cops while they're rioting violates their civil rights. Yeah, you heard right. A lawsuit filed in a federal court in Seattle that claims protesters in the city are essentially being priced out of protecting and protesting for civil rights because the protective gear keeps them safe during their violent felony riots. The Seattle Times reported that five plaintiffs listed some of the items needed for protection from police. Gas masks. If you're not rioting, you don't need gas masks because there's not going to be gas there. So that is stupid suspect story number two with BLM. And the third BLM stupid story, BLM holds a rally in Chicago to support those arrested after looting. That is reparations that BLM organizer said. Anything they want to take, they can take because businesses have insurance. The scores of looters sowing mayhem on high-end Magnificent Mile. And you've been to Chicago. Magnificent Mile is a beautiful place.
Oh, my God.
Not after rioting and looting. Some brought U-Hauls to cart away stolen merchandise. Black Lives Matter member in Chicago held a rally on Monday to support more than 100 arrestees following the widespread looting and rioting that caused $60 million in damage. The Black Lives Matter activist has justified the widespread looting in Chicago as, quote, reparations, end quote, and claimed it doesn't matter because the ransacked stores have insurance. To tell
reparations,
we need to tell
so
that
shoes,
to all,
shoes from Gucci on the Miracle Mile are reparations.
Yeah. And then the stupidest part that she said, and by the way, her name is Ariel Atkins, quote, I don't care if someone decides to loot a Gucci or a Macy's or Nike because that makes sure that person eats and make sure that person has clothes. So apparently, and I've said this before, apparently Gucci has a really good salad bar, apparently. And maybe there's also a Nike sneaker salad bar, too. I don't know, but there must be, because now they can
I can't afford to go to Gucci, so I wouldn't know if their salads are good or not.
Apparently, there's food there. Yeah, okay. So thank God they looted so they can feed their young.
Yes,
stupid,
exactly.
stupid. You can't fix stupid.
No, you Ron White said it best. You cannot fix stupid.
So I need to be inspired, brother. I need to be inspired after all that stupidity.
Darren, I don't even know what to say anymore with just it's constant hatred and divisiveness. I don't understand how human beings, if you do not think the way I do, you're instantly hated and dehumanized. The cancel culture, whatever you want to call it, I think social media is a lot to blame. I would argue, without a doubt, take every criminal, take every police shooting, take everything over about the last 2 years, and I would argue that the national media has killed more people than...
Adding fuel to the fire.
Yes, they promote it, and they do it. And so... You know, I give you respect for educating yourself, and you watch different channels, and I'm not able to do that because it just has gotten too out of control. Where I find my inspiration is it is so very simple to me, and a lot of people don't prescribe to this. You watched in the debate last night.
I did.
Neither one of those guys woke up yesterday and said, I'm going to leave today better than I found it. Neither one of them did. The moderator didn't. Chris Wallace, he was a fucking disaster. Everybody who is partisan had already decided. It didn't matter really what was said. But what bothers me is we are going to vote on my birthday for the leader of this country. And neither one of them last night spoke about leaving this day better than you found it. And what I tell people in my speeches and what I try to live every day, what I feel when I wake up is, all right, today is a brand new day. And by the end of today, when I lay my head down on the pillow and close my eyes, I'm alone with my thoughts, I want to answer one simple question. Did I leave today better than I found it? Worry about what's in your own backyard. Worry about what's in your own house. What's worried about how... What is going to inspire you? What is going to make you feel better if you're facing different things? Darren, you're going through some physical issues right now that we haven't talked about on air. I have a corneal transplant scheduled for October 16th. Okay? So I want you to think about this for a second. October 16th, about 3 weeks away, I have a corneal transplant scheduled. That means... that somewhere in this country, there's somebody walking around just like us living their life, and they don't realize that they're going to be dead in 3 weeks, and they're going to be gifting me the gift of eyesight. That is a profound thing. It is so humbling. It is so emotional for me to think about. And so that's why it's hard for me to turn on CNN and watch like a Don Lemon or Steroid Boy with his hatred and watch these debates last night, because I'm like, you know what? I've got bigger things to worry about than what you are talking about. Or I don't give two shits if LeBron James makes a three-pointer. I don't give two shits if he says, here's what he thinks about politics. You absolutely mean nothing. Worry about what's in your own backyard, and what you are going through today matters more than the opinions and the hatred of people who think out of narcissism that they have a platform. Because, well, I guess they do, but I don't subscribe to that. I'm worried about what's going on today. We come to do this podcast. I've got an eye appointment when I leave here today to prepare for that surgery. I've got stuff to do tomorrow. I'm worried about my own family and my own children. try to focus on that. And when you wake up tomorrow morning, think about how can I leave this day better than I found it. And if you answer that question at night with a positive, I did. I put an extra shopping cart away. I picked up a piece of trash at the gas station. I smiled and said hello to somebody. Then it will cause a positive physical shift in your world. And that's the direction we need to go. God bless everybody. Thank you for tuning in. And we will... God, I hate to think what's going to happen in the next 7 days that we have to talk about, but we'll be back to do it all again. So thank you all. We love you, and see you later.
Batch Boys. Thanks for listening to Batch Boys. Stories, insights, guests, and true blue humor with retired police sergeant Darren Birch and retired police officer Jason Schechterly. Batch Boys, heard weekly and worldwide on Star Worldwide networks and all mobile devices. Badge Boys.